better or for worse, our experiences make us who we are. You know, we grow from them, we learn from them, and they help us grow as a person. And so, yeah, it's part of your evolution and your journey, good, bad, or ugly, to make you who you are later in life. Yeah. And so you're kind of stuck to just spin your wheels or repeat your mistakes if you don't sit with the pain and process it and grow from it and make it part of your experience. And I think that's a message.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Todd Geist. Todd is from the USA and has made a career out of travel and is currently on his 21st year as a travel director crossing the USA and Canada. He's on a quest to visit as many countries as possible, currently up to 76, and is especially into sci-fi, fantasy, and historical fiction across all medias. Now, here's our interview with Todd. Well, welcome to My Movie Story, Todd. Good to have you here. How are you doing today?
Hello, Brian. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's great. It's been a long time coming, this chat. You know, when I started this podcast, I thought to myself, I've got to get Todd on the show at some point, you know, and because I remember us talking about movies and books when I first met you years and years ago, you know, your travels and all of that. So I knew you would be an interesting guy to have on the podcast. So yeah, so for our viewers listening, I'll just tell you briefly, I first met Todd over 20 years ago on my first trip to the United States in 2003. I did a Kentucky tour. Originally, I was going to go by myself. My sister Kate jumped on the bus with me at the last minute. And I was 25 days away from turning 21 and had my 21st on this trip. And where we started in LA, I think we went down to San Diego. There was an interesting night there with me queuing up outside a nightclub for 2 hours waiting to get in. Then it was on to Arizona, Grand Canyon. So yeah, I know Todd has traveled and hosted many, many groups over the years, but I think he still remembers that night and that tour, you know, because it was pretty epic. And then we finished up in Las Vegas and it was fantastic. So tell us a bit about yourself, Todd. And obviously, you're in the travel industry and where do you live and what's your story?
Yeah, man. It's good to see you again after all these years. Yeah, I remember that tour well because I think it was only my fourth tour ever back in 2003. And yeah, you turned 21 and we took you out for your 21st in Tempe, Arizona, Mill Avenue with all my college bars at Arizona State.
Yep.
And there was another guy celebrating a bachelor party. That's right. Getting married in Vegas.
Yeah, we Chris.
Yep. Combined them and had a blowout.
That's right.
Good time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been working in travel. That was my first year. Studied anthropology at school and then got into the travel business working for Kentucky 2003 to 2010. Mm-hmm. And then I switched up to the quote, all ages brands that we have within the same corporation, which currently I'm still running trips across America, Eastern Canada, all over the US. But these days, instead of the 1835 market, like Kentucky, it's mostly Kentucky's parents and grandparents, but open to families and whoever decides to book the trips.
Yeah.
For half my year, I'm running around the West Coast, the Mountain States, National Parks, Deep South, Mid-Atlantic, wherever.
Fantastic.
And then one of the perks is that in the wintertime, work slows down and I have some money in the bank. So then at that point, I go travel internationally for fun.
Yeah.
About three or four weeks a year, usually in January, February.
Nice.
I'll just take off and go find a corner of the world I haven't been to before.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you haven't been everywhere yet, you must be pretty close because I've been following you on Facebook for a while now and it's, you know, your travels are so extensive and you must have traveled the distance from Earth to the moon about 5 times, I think. Have you ever thought about how many miles you've racked up?
That would take a lot of time to figure out, but let's just say it's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I like to think I'm pretty well traveled, but I've met some people recently that have eclipsed my travels, so it's all relative.
So where's left to go? Where haven't you been that you'd love to go, or maybe that's a little out of reach, that, you know, where would you go?
Well, Antarctica
Yeah.
Antarctica is happening in December. That's on the books.
Oh, it is happening.
That'll
Oh,
be my
that's awesome.
seventh. Yep.
Yeah.
That's my seventh continent.
Fantastic.
Otherwise, I really haven't seen enough of Africa. I've only done Egypt and South Africa, so I need to get back there. Central Asia. And then surprisingly, a few what would be obvious places in the Mediterranean I've not been to, like Greece or Jordan.
Right.
So I'd love to go to Petra,
Yeah.
Greece, for the archaeology.
Yeah.
But really anywhere I haven't been, I want to make sure to get to it at some point.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and
But
for
yeah,
people watching this
currently.
who've ever done Kentucky over the years, there's a good chance you would have had Todd as a tour guide. You know, I've spoken to some people about Kentucky around the years that I did it, you know, from between 2003 and 2009, I did a couple of Kentuckys, and I bumped into people on the road and mentioned your name, and they're all, "Oh yeah, Todd, yeah." So he's well known. He's taken everyone pretty much everywhere. So there's a good chance if you travel the States on some kind of a tour around those areas you mentioned, you'll have him. Excellent tour guide, knows all the good spots, loves a good beer. I know that, and you know, good, always good company. So you know, I have really fond memories of that trip. And just it was an interesting time when we hopped on that bus. Like the night before, Arnie had just become the governor, I think. It was back in 2003,
Yeah,
and I was watching his
gosh.
acceptance speech on TV. And then the next day, it was like, "Yep, Schwarzenegger's the governor." And it was interesting. And the Bucks party you mentioned, and all the girls went off for the hens night, and all the boys came to me and Chris's 21st/Bucks night. And it's a bit of a blur, but you know, a fun time was had by all. And I
Remember it
missed my hot
fondly.
air balloon ride the next morning because I was hungover. So I heard knocking on the door, but I wasn't going anywhere. But yeah,
Oh
it
man, that
was
was
an
a good trip.
amazing
And
trip. Yeah,
it's funny you
amazing.
bring up Arnie and all that, because that was before I lived in California. Now I'm in San Francisco, but at the
Right.
time I was still in and out of Phoenix, Arizona, for the most part. That's where I lived.
Right. And that's where
But at
you're
this
from
point, I've been in.
originally, isn't it? Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but now I've been up here in San Francisco for the last 15 years.
Excellent. Yeah, great city too. One of my favorite cities in the States, San Francisco, for sure.
Great one.
Yeah, awesome. Well, again, yeah, great to have you on the show, Todd. And we've got a few different movies here to talk about. One of them links in with your interest around archaeology and travel. One you watched recently, which I also rewatched recently, and it's a bit of a head scratcher. But it's one that's been talked about a few times on the podcast before, and now we're finally covering this movie, which is really cool. And then another big film everyone will know, which will help us complete a bit of a collection of movies. I'm not going to spoil what it is just yet. People have to listen and watch. But I thought we might start off with the film that changed your perspective. And we'll talk about, you know, how and why and what it is and what that film's all about. So yeah, if you could tell us for that first film, Todd, what's it called and what's it all about?
All right, well, this first film chronicles one of the adventures of an archaeologist back in the early 20th century. He liked to fight the bad guys and secure world peace while hunting down surprisingly religious artifacts for a man of science.
Yep.
But it's one that allowed for a lot of travel and exotic locations and excitement and action and comedy and romance and all the good things. It kind of really opens up one's eyes to the world. And that was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
You call this archaeology?
The quest for the Grail is not archaeology. It's a race against evil.
Germany has declared war on the Jones boys.
Those people are trying to kill us.
I know, Dad!
It's a new experience for me.
Happens to me all the time.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Have the adventure of your life. Keeping up with the Joneses.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. So originally the final film in the trilogy, and we never thought there'd be another Indiana Jones after that. You know,
It
they
would have
ride
been the
off into the
final film.
sunset. But we've had two more films since then, you know, and we may talk about those, but yeah, let's talk about Indiana Jones. So take me back. Was this a film that you've saw first saw as a kid, when like around the time that it came out, or was it years after that? Can you remember?
Would have been around the same time. It came out in 89, so I would have been 10. I don't have a memory of seeing it in the theater. So it's possible I did, but I don't think so. I remember just wearing out a VHS tape at my dad's house, just
That's
over
it.
and over. We had the other ones too, I think, but this one just really sunk in because it was just the most fun, and it was a little more new and had some of the better technology and special effects. It was funny.
Yep.
But I just remember latching on to the concept of this world history and all the exotic locations and the interesting people and the foreign languages. And
that's it.
Just things that you're not really used to seeing as a, you know, 12-year-old or whatever I would have been at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like the Indiana Jones films were really like a bit of a doorway into the world, you know, because growing up as kids of the '80s and that we had no internet, you know, it was like, if we wanted to learn about history or the world, we had to go find the encyclopedia. Right. So here was
National
this movie.
Geographic magazine.
Exactly. Yeah. Here was this series of movies where you've got this guy in these locations, you know, finding these treasures, running away from Nazis. You know, they seem to pop up a bit in these films. And so for anyone who's, you know, some of our younger viewers who may not have seen all of the Indiana Jones films or the original ones, so this is the third film in what was kind of originally a trilogy, but we've now had five films. Give us a brief rundown of The Last Crusade. Like, what's it about? You know, because obviously it wasn't Indiana Jones's Last Crusade. He did two more films, right? But it was talking about something else, some other crusade. So yeah, can you tell us a bit about the plot? What's Indiana Jones trying to find at this time?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because at the time I didn't know the meaning of crusades, really, right? Because I didn't know world history and religious wars and other things. I just thought it was the last crusade, like, you know, his last ride, as it were. But it you know, starts out with him kind of showing a bit of an origin story. You get to see how he, as a teenager, got into the life of adventure and archaeology and fear of snakes and other things in the opening shots.
Yep.
But then from there, it fast forwards to the Indiana we know as the college professor and hunter of antiquities. But it really gets into a lot more of a personal story for him, because in addition to him just finding the next artifact, it's also him connecting with his father and bonding over the things that they share, and then the regrets they have for not really connecting in his youth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about how he's trying to find the Holy Grail,
yep.
which kind of makes a nice counterpoint to Raiders of the Lost Ark, because he's again back in the realm of Christian mysticism, you know, and some of those artifacts that we hear about in legends.
Yep.
And so the idea, though, is that his dad was the expert on the Holy Grail. So his dad first was tasked by this businessman to go find the Grail. They have some new clues, but then his dad disappears. And so now it's up to Indiana to not just find the artifact for the sake of this businessman and science and world history, but also to the personal quest to find his father and rescue him.
Mm.
And then as we find out, once he gets over involved in Europe, it's of course the Nazis again, which like his nemesis from every good Indiana Jones movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, the three good ones.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, you know, he meets all the interesting characters along the way, and he has to, you know, save the day, find the artifact, bond with his father. They have some fun humor and adventures along the way.
Absolutely.
You get to see some old favorites from past movies.
Yep.
It's kind of like a nice little sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark, more than any other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like the second one, Temple of Doom, is pretty much a standalone story. It's interesting because if I didn't realize this till later in life, because as a kid, my favorite one was the Temple of Doom. That was the one I was more attracted to for some reason. Probably because I like, you know, scary horror stuff. And that's kind of got some pretty intense, scary scenes.
Spookier.
Crocodiles at the end, people's hearts getting ripped out. In hindsight, it's not seen as the best of the films, but yeah, it's still good fun. But if you look at the very start of Temple of Doom, it has the year at the start of each film. And I think in Temple of Doom, it says it's the year 1935 or 36. This came out after Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then Raiders of the Lost Ark says it's set in 1937 or 1938. So technically, Temple of Doom is a prequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. So not many people know that. And I didn't pick this up until years later. And I thought, well, hang on. Like, was that an error? Or did they mean to say this happened before Raiders of the Lost Ark? So... yeah, so in that way, you could say it goes Temple of Doom, Raiders, and then The Last Crusade. Because, yeah, like you said, Raiders and Last Crusade are probably connected. They're the most similar, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If memory serves at the beginning, I think they say it's 39 or 40. It's somewhere where Hitler's in power, but World War II hasn't kicked off yet.
Yeah, that's right, in The Last Crusade, yeah. Yeah, and then at the start, we meet the young Indiana Jones, and who was he played by again? Do you remember?
River Phoenix,
absolutely.
or
Did really well.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
God, yeah, because he was just coming up, man. Like in the 90s, he was just hitting the scene. And
yeah.
But then, yeah, and so unfortunately it didn't work out. And
No, but he was tipped to be, you know, a big star. Like he could have been the equivalent of, like, you know, what Leonardo DiCaprio is doing these days. You know, I think River Phoenix could have had a very similar career back in the 90s. But yeah, unfortunately it wasn't meant
sadly,
to be.
He's been a mention on my Los Angeles City tour ever since when I drive by the Viper Room.
Oh, of course, because like, that club's still there, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. I remember going past that on my Hollywood tour as well. Yeah, and
but that opening scene, man, that's a lot of fun for me because I just rewatched this last week to get ready for this, and that whole opening sequence, I knew it was somewhere in Utah growing up, like vaguely. Yeah. But as an adult, I can totally recognize it as Arches National Park because I take tours there a couple times a year.
Yep.
So I was like, the individual rock formations before I even registered or looked it up, I'm like, oh man, that's Balanced Rock, and there's this is totally Arches.
It's cool to
like,
see
the whole
places
scene where
you've been to, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like where he goes into the cave and finds the tomb robbers. There's no cave there, but I know exactly the spot. I could walk you to it. It's right underneath Delicate Arch. It's awesome.
That's really cool. Yeah. And what the beginning of this film, it reminds me of, there was a bunch of young Indiana Jones movies. I think the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles or something, like a whole bunch of made for TV
series.
films. Did you see any of those back in the day?
I did. And funny enough, they're all on Disney Plus now because
oh, are they?
I looked
Right.
it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember watching them as a kid. It was somewhere in the like early 90s.
Yeah.
And it was a television show that played off of, there was both young Indiana, like he's 7 or 8. And then there's teenage Indiana, and it mostly has him in like World War I as a volunteer and a soldier, and then all the various adventures he gets into in World War I.
Yeah.
But it's kind of silly in a sense because it introduces him meeting all of these characters of history, like Theodore Roosevelt and all the great inventors and artists and writers of the time. He just casually bumps into you, kind of like Forrest Gump.
Yep.
But it's somewhat fun, you know, just like, so like the influences he would have had in his life by the time we meet him are incredible in terms of the backstory and influence he would have had.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we see a lot of that these days. We see a lot of movies, you know, or TV shows based on movies that kind of reviving these characters, and, or, you know, like a prequel of sorts. So I guess that was kind of, I guess, one of the early types of prequels, wasn't it? Like exploring this character before all of these big films we know him for. So yeah, that was sort of one of the early pioneers of that. And there was
I
a lot
get
of them.
Into it,
they
actually.
Made close to like 20 of those movies or something. They were just punching them out, weren't they?
I think it was a TV show, but I think they got through 3 or 4 seasons, and then they had 3 or 4 movies at the end to kind of wrap it up.
Right.
And those came out after Last Crusade because they then have his father in them, or at least one of them does.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
But usually before, it's either him with mom as a little kid or him as a, you know, 19-year-old at war.
Yeah, interesting. I'd
falling
have to,
in love,
yeah,
and
I'd
having
like to
adventures.
Go back and try and discover some of those as well. But we'll talk a bit more about Crusade and the travel and, you know, some of the themes in that as well. But just quickly, your thoughts on the later sequels. You had Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and then just recently Dial of Destiny. Thoughts on those? Did you like them? Were they necessary? Did you love them?
I saw Crystal Skull exactly once in the theater and was severely disappointed. I have not had any intention to see it again because I kind of want to pretend it didn't exist.
Yep.
If one saw the South Park episode where they kind of make fun of it, that pretty well sums up my feelings on the whole thing.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen that yet.
It's not polite. But then I saw Dial of Destiny last year and I liked it. I did. Like, would I put it top two? No, I'd say it's probably fighting for Temple of Doom third place in my mind.
Yep.
Which again goes, it's like when he's fighting Nazis, those are the most fun.
Yep.
But it's fun. It was nice. It was well acted. It was like a nice little bow to kind of get Crystal Skull out of our mouth to and move on to like a better ending.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of tied up some loose ends, didn't it? Yeah. Yeah. And I did like the when they said it was going to, you know, they were going to explore time travel. I'm like, hang on. Because they explored aliens in Crystal Skull, and that was stupid. So I'm like, how are they going to pull off the time travel thing? But I thought it was done really well. You know, I think the way that they just kind
not
of
bad.
Seamlessly fly into this period of time, and they're like, oh crap, we're in the past here. You know, and then obviously we see him at the end kind of finally settling down. Or do we? You know, he reaches for his hat again. Will there be a sixth one with a 95-year-old Indiana Jones?
I hope not.
We'll see, right?
Yeah, the
never
thing
know.
That annoyed me, about Crystal Skull. Is it like the Crystal Skulls are a hoax? I mean, there's a whole thing about these archaeological relics that are supposedly whatever, but they're not. They're complete fabrications. Now that said, I mean, for movies that are based in science, every one of them ends up in magic somehow, whether it
Course.
be religious or aliens or mathematical time travel.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Yeah,
That's
it's
kind of the fun of it.
that's the point. Yeah, the suspension of disbelief, right? Yeah. And then just coming back to Crusade, so you mentioned that this, took your interest in archaeology and travel and sort of, set you on your way a little bit. So can you talk a bit about that? And is this sort of like, because I'll be the first to admit here, like when I was a kid, I wanted to be, when they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm like, well, I'd love to be an archaeologist and I want to be a stuntman as well. So basically, I wanted to be Indiana Jones, right? As a kid, because I'm like, I want to do that stuff. I want to find treasure, beat up the bad guys, swing around on a whip. I may have even attempted that at home with like a skipping rope or something from a tree. Probably didn't end well. But yeah, so what seeds did this plant in your mind, this film?
It took a little time to grow, but
Mm.
I think it did plant those seeds for an interest in world travel, culture, history, old things, the human experience, and all of that. Back if like that age when I was, adolescent, going into high school, if you'd asked me what I wanted to do in life, I'd say I wanted to be a doctor. But it was for purely selfish reasons, if I just wanted doctor money.
Yeah, pretty
So
nice,
when
yeah.
I got to college and started taking some of my early prerequisites and realizing I just don't like science enough to be a doctor. And so I needed to look for something else. And I had no idea what to do with my life, but there was an anthropology department, and that was a major that one could take. And I mean, I was like, all right, what's anthropology? And I'm like, ooh, it's archaeology and human evolution and the development of culture and language and just, the human of experience, the study of mankind, if you will. And I was like, well, that's perfect. And then, because I already had this sort of growing interest in it all. And, I've been interested in history and other things over the years, throughout high school and early college. But if I had to look back on it to the spot that kind of stoked the fire from the beginning, I really do think Indiana Jones had a big part of it. For showing me that there is a greater world outside the United States, and all of these interesting people worth meeting, and all of these interesting stories worth learning and telling and teaching. And I still to this day love maps, and I love how the Indiana Jones movies always show him traveling. Anytime he gets in a plane, it shows the map, and you're
That's
here to
right.
there to there to there. And it was fun watching the one last week when I rewatched Last Crusade because, nowadays we would get on a flight from LA to London, no sweat. Whereas he has to get on a plane in New York to go to Venice, and it shows him connecting three times because it's 1939.
That's
So he
right.
has to like change planes in Newfoundland and in the, Azores. And then, and these are all places that don't mean anything to me as a 12-year-old, but now I'm watching the map going, oh, yes, I've been to that place.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, like he was, it really kind of introduced the world to a lot of kids growing up with these movies. It was like, the world is this big place and you can go and have this adventure, and you don't have to be sort of confined to where you live, and there's things to learn, there's still treasure out there's still places we haven't explored, and that's kind of what Indiana Jones is all about, isn't it? And yeah, he's that curiosity to go out there and discover the unknown. I think it really catches that pretty well. And yeah, and it's just a favorite, a fan favorite for so many people. And we've got another film to talk about later that may star Harrison Ford. I mean, I don't want to give it away, but we'll get to that. But just in wrapping up the Last Crusade talk, do you have a favorite scene or a moment from the film?
I mean, anything that has he and his father, but I think the best one is the whole sequence with the tank,
Oh,
like where
yes.
they're like riding after, and then like he's fighting the colonel on the tank, and they're trying to
So
rescue his
good.
dad and Marcus at the same time. But
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't gotten to it yet, but like the best part of this movie is Sean Connery,
Oh,
just
of course.
absolutely. Like it's just
Yes.
like his dry, just goofy sense of humor, like the old professor, and the two of them interacting, and him being junior but not wanting to be. It's, oh,
So
like
good.
it's this the humor. I mean, it's easily the funniest Indiana Jones, and it's all because of the
Absolutely.
relationship with Sean Connery. They just nail it.
Yep, absolutely.
But that scene on the tank is, it's exciting, it's funny,
Great.
it's suspenseful, it's also heartfelt, right? He goes off the cliff and everybody thinks he's died, and Sean Connery like has a breakdown. They're like, oh my God, I lost you, boy. And he just
Definitely.
comes crawling out like nothing happened, looks over their
Yeah.
shoulder, like, what's up? And they're
It's
like,
great. Yeah, there's
you're
lots of
alive.
nice little touches like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. There's so much to unpack from this film. There's the whole Sean Connery conversation, and obviously it's classic Spielberg. It's Steven Spielberg working at the height of his creative powers in the 80s and 90s. He was doing his best work then, and we featured a few Spielberg films on this podcast, so now we've got another one to add to the bow. But yeah, I think I agree with you about Sean Connery. I think that's what really made this film stand out, was like their relationship. And in the
It was
first two
perfect.
Indiana Jones, it was very much Indiana Jones is like this rogue guy, works alone, but he's always tagging along someone, like a woman or a child. And then it's like the only one who can pull him up and tell him what to do is his dad, right? And then we see this more vulnerable side of Indiana Jones in the third one, where he's like, "Yes, sir," like he's
First,
like,
their
"Oh,
first
that's
scene
my
together.
dad. I better stand up straight,
He
pull
smashes him with a
myself up."
vase and he stands right back up. He's like, yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right. It's great. It's fantastic. Yeah, awesome. Well, we do have a couple more films to talk about. I mean, obviously we could do a whole podcast on Indiana Jones, and maybe that's something we can add to the list and do it and have you back another time. We'll do a whole Indiana Jones special. But we might move on now, Todd, if that's all right, and cover your
Mind.
next film. So this is one that both of us had sort of only just recently watched or rewatched and had to get our heads wrapped around, and there's a bit to unpack with this one. And this is the film that you think everyone must see. And I really like this category in the podcast because everyone brings a very different film to the conversation about what they think is a must-see film that even if you only watch it once, you need to see this film because you won't forget it. You'll be talking about it. It's going to challenge you. It's not what you expect. It stays with you, basically. To what this category is all
Awesome.
about. So what film have you chosen for this category? Tell us all about it.
Okay, so this one I only recently saw like 2 months ago before we recorded, so February 24. But it had been one that I was aware of as being a very, very good movie. And I have a very good friend of mine named Jason who is just, he's put a lot of thought in his favorite movies, let's say that.
Yep.
And
Hey,
this is one of
Jason.
his top three, probably perfect. He describes it as the perfect movie, and it's probably his favorite of all time. And he
Right.
keeps a running list of his favorite 100 plus movies.
Wow.
So anyway, back in February, I had the opportunity to go on a date, and this girl that I was dating at the time, she said it was one of her favorite movies and it was showing in a local cinema. And so I said, all right, let's check it out. I've always needed to see this movie, and what fun to see it in like a little neighborhood cinema. My female friends were joking about it because like, oh, it's like a romantic kind of chick flick sort of, movie. And I'm like, really? They're like, I had no idea what it was about. I just knew it was good. But anyway, so I got into this movie and it's about relationships and the good, the bad, if they're worth remembering, if we should try to forget about the painful parts, what it means to grow from a relationship or not. And it features some wonderful actors that were all a complete surprise to me. And a very straight performance from a comic genius, Jim Carrey. And the movie is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
This is a hoax, right?
I assure you, no.
Is there any risk of brain damage?
It's on a par with a night of heavy drinking. Nothing you'll miss.
Fantastic. Fantastic. It's been a long time coming, this film. I'm really stoked that it's finally made it to the podcast, and hopefully your friend's okay with you talking about it and beating him to the punch. And Jason, if you're
He
watching, if
is.
you
He's
want to be
proud
a
of me.
guest, get in touch with me, mate. I'm sure we could have you on the show as well. I'm sure Todd can vouch for you. But yeah, what an original, offbeat, eccentric movie. And like, so great to
Yeah,
see
it's
Jim
nothing like it.
Carrey do something like this again after The Truman Show, where he just surprises people. And he wasn't just this comedy guy who could pull faces, but he could choose really smart stories and play, these real characters that you could relate to, and he did a great job. But yeah, so obviously for yourself, having just seen it recently, you went into it knowing nothing about it. Tell us about your experience watching this film. Like, did it make sense to you? Did it Was it just to mess
It
with your
took a little
head?
time. Well, that's the beautiful thing about the movie, is just it's creative. I mean, whatever you get out of the relationship story, it's fun to watch, just to see them piece it together. Because it's out of sequence on purpose, and you're kind of trying to figure out what's in, is this in his head? Is this actually happening? When did this happen? And it starts out just kind of meh. I mean, guy meets a girl, and he just seems like an awkward schlub, and she's a little bit of a kind of free spirit, and you're like, okay, starting off like a normal movie. This is just a a boy meets girl, and now we're gonna see them fall in love, and good to go. And then it just gets weird. It just gets
Does
really weird
very quickly.
as you then kind of you fast forward a bit and see the fact that they've had the relationship, and you get to see it disintegrate from bad to good backwards, and you get to see the heartbreak of a breakup, and but you also get to see the joy of an early relationship and kind of figure out if it's worth forgetting the good to forget the bad. And so that's like kind of the whole premise of the movie, is they have the opportunity to wipe the memories of one another to help get over a breakup, and whether that's a good or a bad thing, whether they want it, whether it's useful. But it's something everybody can relate to, is what I found. I mean, just we've all been in a relationship, we've all been in love, we've all probably had a breakup or two, because statistically most relationships will end in a breakup. And so we can all relate. We can all have that moment where we feel like one of them and go,
That's right.
okay. So yeah, it sits with you.
That's
And then it
right.
has you kind of wondering, what would I have done? What,
Exactly.
if I could take the easy way out, would I erase the memory, or would I sit with the pain and grow from it? Or
It's such an interesting question that this film tackles. And like you said, the way it starts off with, we meet Jim Carrey, and he's this quiet, sort of unassuming guy. The girl played by Kate Winslet, like her hair color changes every 5 minutes, and she's this breath of fresh air. And then it looks like they're going to hook up, and then all of a sudden we see him, and he's devastated, and he's found out his girlfriend Clementine has decided to erase him from her memory. And then he decides to get the procedure done, and then we go inside his head as he's reliving these memories. And that was the part I thought that was so well done, how it showed him reliving a memory and then observing the memory again from the outside in, and how it didn't use really fancy special effects. You could tell this was a low budget film. Just clever lighting and, blurring people's faces out and muffling the sound, and then giving this impression that the memory was just kind of caving in on itself. And it takes you kind of on this journey, and it shows you their relationship. And it was really clever. Did you have a, I mean, it moves really quickly, and it's kind of a whirlwind movie, but out of those scenes, was there one that really stood out for you the most, that kind of sticks in your mind when it came to his memory being erased?
I mean, it's like maybe the, because in the middle it does get a little silly on purpose, because you have to give Jim Carrey at least a moment of Jim Carrey.
Of course,
So it's like when he's, because like the kind of the premise is that he starts at his recent breakup, which is just devastating. It's the first thing you want to erase, and so you see him doing that, and you're like, oh my God, these two were terrible together. You got to get rid of this. But then as he keeps going back in time, the relationship gets happier and nicer and more lovely, and you're like, oh, these two are so sweet. And then he makes the realization, I don't want to forget her. I need to at least keep these memories. These are happy memories. I don't want these gone. So then he starts trying to figure out a way to keep her like trapped and hidden in his mind, and memories that she shouldn't be in. And so there's one where he's like reimagining himself as like a 3-year-old,
That's right.
and she's one of his mom's friends. So she has no business in that memory, but he's like trying to hide her in sections of his brain where she shouldn't be. And you get to see Jim Carrey as an adult, but like the size of a 3-year-old, playing himself as a 3-year-old, and like taking a bath in the sink, and
It was great.
she's there trying to talk him through it. It's ridiculous, but funny.
But clever, and it makes sense, and it flows really well, and it plays to, Jim Carrey's strengths, and I think having done the Truman Show, 5 years or so before that, sort of introduced audiences to this side of him where he could play comedy a little bit, but he was also like this guy who was just way out of his depth in this really unusual situation, figuring out what's going on, so kind of similar to the Truman Show in that way, I guess. And we haven't featured the Truman Show on this podcast yet, but I'm sure it'll come up at some point. But yeah, like you said, with this film, it does kind of, address that tough question, like, if, you know, we've all experienced some kind of a breakup, or we've been in a relationship where it's gotten tough and tense and all of that. And it's not all wine and roses all the time. You know, every relationship has kind of that honeymoon phase, and then it settles into itself, and then it's just like life, right? We all ask ourselves, like, what memories do I want to keep? What rough patches do I want to get rid of? You know, she decides obviously to just erase everything and just like start over, you know, because she's so impulsive. But then when he's in his process, he's like, well, hang on, I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose this. So then he's kind of, it makes you reflect a little bit, I guess, like sometimes even painful things are still worth hanging on to as well. Yeah. Do you think this film kind of sort of was trying to get that message across, or something different? What's your take on that?
Yeah, because, I mean, better or for worse, our experiences make us who we are. You know, we grow from them, we learn from them, and they help us grow as a person.
Yeah.
And so if you erase those memories, you also erase those lessons and the feelings and whatever comes with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's part of your evolution and your journey, good, bad, or ugly, to make you who you are later in life. Yeah. And so you're kind of stuck to just spin your wheels or repeat your mistakes if you don't sit with the pain and process it and grow from it and make it part of your experience. And I think that's a message. Mm-hmm. They're taking the cheater's way out.
Yep.
And so as a result, they don't grow from it.
Yeah. That's true.
Potentially wouldn't if the whole thing would just play out as they planned.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good way to put it. Like in every relationship, you know, there's those moments that really test us, you know, all the trials and stuff. And, you know, and if we don't learn from that can then be sort of become, I guess, the baggage that we can take into future relationships, you know, and then the same stuff comes up, or, you know, we can end up being in people get stuck in these self-destructive patterns and end up with the same kind of person who's the wrong person for them. So yeah, like it would be easy to just be like, you know what, I didn't like that, let's erase it from our memory. But if we don't learn, then yeah, we don't grow, you know. And when I was watching it, it kind of made me think a little bit about what we see in the world today with like cancel culture, that, you know, you've got certain people who are seeing films, TV shows, whatever, made a long time ago, where people were a little braver to explore these things, and maybe we were a bit more tolerant to listen to it. But now cancel culture is like, I don't like that. That's bringing up a bad feeling in me. I want to just get rid of it and pretend like it never existed. And, you know, this is creating a really big divide in the world. You know, it's like, well, hang on. You know, you can't just change it to suit you. This was made at a certain time by a certain person with a certain message. You can't just cancel that, right? So this film kind of, in a way, sort of predicted that a bit. You know, it was pre-social media, pre-Facebook, all of that, you know, which I think has fed into this cancel culture today. So it's a really smart film. Like it kind of almost predicted the future of, you know, adults, I guess, who were just like, I didn't like that, let's pretend it never happened. And if I erase you on Facebook, then you never existed, right? It sort of teases the future a little bit, doesn't it?
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
That baggage still exists, whether you want to acknowledge it or not.
100%. For sure. Yeah. And written by Charlie Kaufman.
Wild to see.
Yeah. It was written by Charlie Kaufman. Have you seen any of his other films?
I don't think so. I did a quick search to see. It's a lot of similarly really kind of funky, insightful stuff.
Yep.
Apparently he's got a bit of history working with the director, Michael Gondry, on some other projects.
Yep.
So they have a bit of a partnership.
Yep.
But it seems like there was a lot of creative decisions made on both of their parts, where like Kaufman's original script was going to have a different ending and kind of go a different direction. And then the director had some edits and some other things that were able to change it to the movie we saw.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like he ended up getting the Oscar for the best original screenplay. Which
that's right.
He should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Kate Winslet was up for the best actress that year.
I think that was her second nomination. Yeah, after Titanic. So she was nominated about four or five times before she eventually won for, I think it was The Reader she eventually won for. So she was nominated a bunch of times. And we still haven't seen Jim Carrey nominated. You know, I think he should have been nominated for The Truman Show, even for this film. You know, I don't think we'll ever see him.
He's more or less retired, hasn't he?
Yeah, kind of semi-retired. He pops up every now and then.
He's like hangs out in paints, right?
Yeah, he does the Sonic the Hedgehog movies. Right? He's the bad guy in Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay, that's right. He was in those.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think he's like into he's in like art, isn't he? Like a painter or something, and he just sort of relaxes and just doesn't want to be involved in most of this nonsense anymore.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, he's obviously got that sort of freedom to kind of do what he wants now. But yeah, like he did some really interesting films back in the day. You know, obviously this, The Truman Show, you know, Man on the Moon. You know, another one I watched of his recently, The Number 23, which was interesting, kind of about the dark conspiracy theory film. Yeah, are you like generally, are you a bit of a Jim Carrey fan? Would you say you've seen most of his films?
Probably most of the ones that are notable.
Yeah.
But I mean, like everybody, I learned about him from his slapstick stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the world probably learned about him from Ace Ventura. The Americans, at least, we would have known him from In Living Color,
yep.
which was a sketch comedy show like the Wayans brothers and their yep. buddies.
Yep.
So he was like the token goofy white guy.
Yeah.
And otherwise, mostly black cast.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, you know, characters like Fire Marshal Bill and whatnot. And it was just.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a short move from there into Ace Ventura, where he got to just go full slapstick nonsense, and then
yeah,
kind of became typecast for that for a while.
He did, yeah,
getting some serious roles.
Yep, absolutely. Like he's done some really interesting stuff, and you know, and yeah, he proved himself in this film that he could play, you know, someone straight, someone dealing with, you know, guilt, resentment, depression, angst, all of the stuff that comes with a breakup. Yeah, and I think he pulled it off really well. Really well.
Kate Winslet too, because she was like type against cast, or cast against type, sorry.
Because
at the time she had been done a lot of, like, a period pieces like Titanic yep. and things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of drama.
Yeah,
so for her right. to get to play this free spirited little you know, impulsive whatever. I mean, she's kind of a play on like the manic pixie girl caricature, but yep. like very much proving that that's like a bad archetype, and that she was yeah. rejecting that archetype because she was
yeah.
definitely being her own person.
That's
even
right.
if she was the wheeling free spirit to the insecure, you know, shy guy.
Yep.
Which is, again, like in movies, it's always explored that sort of relationship a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're like the fun, outgoing extrovert who pulls the anxious, insecure guy out of his shell. And
yeah.
Look at this. It's romance and it works and it's lovely. Yep. And then, absolutely. Of course, this one doesn't end well, but, you know, it all spirals and disintegrates and gives them the premise of the movie. Should we start over, erase it, forget it?
Yeah.
Try again. What do we do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess it takes the classic formula of a romantic film or comedy, which is, you know, boy meets girl, boy likes girl, boy wins the girl, boy loses the girl, and then boy tries to win the girl back, right? And then happy ending sort right. of thing. So it kind of follows that a little bit, whereas like you see in the flashbacks how like he was just becoming really complacent in the relationship. And she was bored. Like, she even said, he's boring.
Yeah.
But then when he realized, you know, when he revisited these memories and relived them, he's like, oh, hang on. You know, yeah, I'm really missing what I'm not seeing everything here. I'm missing out on this. And he tries to get her back, and he understands that he's in this experience and tries to navigate himself through this world as it disappears around him. Yeah, it was really, really clever. Really clever film, man.
And hopefully he's realizing some of his insecurities, you know, because like the fight scene that breaks him up, you see how he's, you know, accusing her of infidelity because he's just really insecure mm-hmm. about his own, you know, relationship and his role in it. And he says a terrible thing, which leads her to run out on him and mm-hmm. finalize the breakup and kind of starts off the whole process. So it's,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, he learns the hard way that he really did want her around.
Yep.
So hopefully if they got a second chance, he'd be able to work on his issues as she works on hers, they can be a better match.
Yeah. And I guess maybe. I mean, the start of the film, they kind of meet, like they think they're meeting each other for the first time, but obviously they've already met. So there's some flaw, obviously, in this memory erasing system because they find each other again. And then at the end, it's like, well, hang on, even though we've said all these things about each other, we can be okay with that. You know, maybe we can just be okay. It doesn't have to be terrible. It doesn't have to be super exciting and fun all the time, but we can be okay. You know, maybe that's enough, you know, and like that's kind of where it sort of leaves you. It's like, oh, well, maybe they will get back together. Will they start the process?
It's an ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can really take it as a happy ending or not, depending on your personal choice, views, lifestyle, baggage, whatever.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, like that, yeah, like, oh, let's give it another shot. You know, the good times were good enough to outweigh the bad times. And now that we know each other's triggers, perhaps we can navigate around them and make it work.
Yeah.
You know, we're soulmates, and that's why we found each other on the beach, because we were supposed to. We, you know, we just couldn't forget each other because we're just meant to be.
Yeah.
But you could also take the pessimistic approach that they're just doomed to repeat the same mistakes because they haven't learned anything because they erased all the stuff that would have helped them grow and learn. And so they'll just be in like a doom loop just forever.
Yeah. That's it.
And that was apparently Charlie Kaufman's original script, was it had Clementine going in to get her mind erased as a like 60-year-old for the 15th time, because they were in a pattern. They would just live it. They would fall in love. They'd fall out of love, erase, meet, start again, and then just do it forever. Like they were doomed to just repeat the whole process.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That would have been an interesting ending. Yeah. Yeah. And like it raises a lot of questions, this film. It's definitely one that you've got to kind of reflect on a little bit, because everyone's going to have a different reaction to it, I think, based on their own experiences, I suppose, with relationships and breaking up and all that stuff. Yeah,
that's why it's nice. Like, I like the ambiguous ending sometimes, because it gives you that power to make it what you want it to be.
Yeah, that's it.
You can read it as the happy ending story, or you can read it in the two are just never going to make it work because they'll never learn.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes those films that don't give you the closure, it forces you, especially when you've been so invested in the film, like with this, and you're like watching every second of it, it then forces you to try and come up with your own conclusion. And that's a smart way, I think, of a film that has staying power, where it's like it doesn't give you all the answers. Yes. And that's why this is a film that people talk about and carry with them, because it's like, you know, like we're having this conversation about it now, like, you know, you could bring this film up with anyone else who's seen it, and it could be a completely different conversation. You know, you could talk about the other characters, the side characters who we haven't really talked about, because we don't want to give away too much. But yeah, there's that side plot as well, the Kirsten Dunst side plot, and the side plot of Elijah Wood and what he does and how he plays with the memories and all of that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, the doctor, Mark Ruffalo, is a great cast. I knew none of those people were in the movie when I sat down to watch it.
Yeah.
So it was a pleasant surprise when they all popped on screen.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All working at, you know, interesting points in their careers and stuff. So it was, yeah, really good to see. Fantastic.
You know, a fun little bit of trivia I picked up is that the name of the company, like the lab that erases your mind, is called Lacuna. And that translates as gap.
Ah, right. Gap.
Right? That's clever.
Create a gap in your memory. Yeah. That's well, another film we could continue really talking about forever, but we do have one more to get through. And I know that this is a film and part of a series that's very near and dear to you and has been for many, many years. And it's going to help us complete a little trilogy in this podcast now. So if that hasn't given it away yet, Todd's about to tell us now. What is your all-time favorite film, Todd?
This one's probably been given away by some of the background, but there is definitely a trilogy in my life as a child that has stuck with me through adolescence and adulthood, and it's just one of my favorite things ever. And even though some of the other movies in this original trilogy might be better reviewed or more critically acclaimed or just generally agreed on as the better movie, this is the one that I watched over and over and over and over and over as a kid, and it was my absolute favorite. So part of this choice is because the other two have been already chosen and spoken about on this podcast. But for me, the favorite, if I got to be honest, is going to be Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi. Fantastic.
A legend fulfilled. An epic of heroes, villains, and aliens from a thousand worlds.
Eat your crap!
The quest continues. The circle closes. The saga lives on. Return of the Jedi.
And I have to say, I'm pretty much the same. When I was a kid, this is the one I watched over and over as well. Maybe because it had Ewoks in it. I don't know. It was kind of the closure of the first two. As a kid, I found Empire was a little confusing and a little bit too adult. This seemed to be more like action and adventure, the big battle in space. Anyway, I'll shut up because this is your film. So yeah. Do you remember seeing this or any of the Star Wars films for the first time? I mean, that's going back a while now, but can you recall what was going on?
Same would have just been like Indiana Jones. It would have been at home in the living room.
Yep.
Because this came out in 84. So I was only this was 83. So yeah, I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Yep.
So no, too young. So I mean, all three of them were out by the time I started watching them. And I don't know exactly when, but let's say somewhere in my first decade of life, I probably watched them for the first time. But then again, sort of in that realm of, you know, 8 to 14 or whatever, just running them on repeat.
Of course, yeah.
And like you said, like Empire was a little dark, little complex for a, you know, a 10-year-old.
Of course,
New Hope was fun. You know, it starts the whole thing off and you get to introduce to the characters. But like Jedi just looks sharper.
Yeah.
Like, the technology's better. The special effects are better. You got all the cool aliens. Mm-hmm. You know, the battles. It's just the big climax, the fight. There's more action.
Yep.
You get the resolution. Good vanquishes evil. It's just... Yeah. All the things,
absolutely.
Which made it the most fun to watch over and over and over again.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And coming off the back of coming off the back of Empire Strikes Back, where basically the good guys lose in that film, they really come back with a vengeance here, you know. And Luke Skywalker is more confident. He's learnt. He's like he's got an agenda now. It's like, I'm gonna take down Darth Vader. You've got the continuing romance between Han Solo and Princess Leia, which is great to watch, you know. And yeah, like you said, the special effects had really leapt forward just in that few years, you know, and it does look really sharp and really good, and they still hold up pretty well today as well. Yeah. And obviously not, because like you and I, our generation, we had to watch these on VHS or when they occasionally surfaced on television, which wasn't very often back then, before cable and all of that. But then obviously in 1997, the original trilogy was re-released. Did you go and see them, all the movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
By then I was a certified Star Wars geek.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at some point, whenever that was in the mid-90s, when the Heir to the Empire book trilogy came out, like the first time I introduced Grand Admiral Thrawn, the Timothy Zahn novels, man, I was hooked. And at that point, that really launched all of the new books, mm-hmm. comic books. There's this whole renaissance of Star Wars in like the mid-90s. And I just ate all of it up. And that's when I started going overboard. I was buying the action figures and hanging them on the walls. I was super geek back in those days.
Absolutely.
Still have kind of, but you know, anyway.
Yeah, that's fine.
But good. When those came out, yeah, that was like near the end of high school when they re-released the original trilogy in the theaters. And that was incredible to see them on the big screen, to get the big boom of the speakers, to see the crawl to the Star Wars themes. I was getting like goosebumps just.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it was amazing.
We never got that experience watching it at home.
Yeah.
You know, no. To see the big boom and the John Williams score. And
yep.
And even though you know it's going to come, you're still just like, step back.
That's it. Yeah. You know, experiencing those films the way they were meant to be seen, you know, on the big screen.
Yeah.
And it was like, you go to the cinema, in the dark cinema, and you just zapped into this world. You know, that's what Star Wars really pioneered that. So, yeah, I remember going to see
people you're seeing it with.
Well, yeah.
Everybody was like, they were all of a like mind. So like, as soon as like everyone's screaming and cheering, it's not just like going to a movie and everybody's quietly, politely watching the thing with their dates. Like this was a raucous experience of super fans.
Absolutely.
We're all just like joyous to see this on the big screen for perhaps the first time ever.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I just memory just popped back in my head. I think me and my mates went and saw all three of them when they were back in the cinema. I'm not sure which one it was. Maybe it was Empire or Jedi, but like when the Star Wars comes on the screen and it's like, and it's like the whole cinema shook. I thought I'd pull this prank and I had this big bucket of popcorn and I was pretending it was going to, you know, catch me off guard. And we were sitting in the back row because that's what you do as teens, throw popcorn at everyone. And then the Star Wars things comes on the screen and I pretend to jump out of my seat and I like throw the popcorn up and all the popcorn comes out and like lands on the guy in front of me in the row in front of me. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? So like, sorry. He just brushes the popcorn off. He's like, do I have to call security? I'm like, no, all good. I wasn't expecting that. It scared me. It kind of backfired on me. He probably would have beaten us up if he had the chance. But yeah, it was good fun
to watch the movie.
Good experience. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, those re-releases were something. I remember at the time in high school thinking they were incredible. Because they had like all the new scenes, the new special effects, like a new hope. Anyway, he steps on Jabba and we meet him at the spaceport. And, you know, and like Return of the Jedi, they add that whole song and dance scene at Jabba's palace and they add the beak to the Sarlacc. And in hindsight, terrible, unnecessary. None of it should have happened. But 16 year old me, amazing. Best thing ever. Now, having just watched it again last week, I couldn't find the original despecialized version I thought I had a download of somewhere.
Yeah.
And I was so, like, every time I got to those scenes, it was just so jarring because it didn't belong.
Yeah, apparently you can only get the original trilogy before the re-release on VHS. They weren't even released on DVD. So yeah, you've got them. VHS or DVD? VHS.
Those are the VHS.
Yeah, those yeah. Rare. Hang on to those. But they'll be worth something one day. Yeah.
There is a dude online. You can look it up. I forget his name, but it's called the Despecialized Edition, and he essentially took the nice special effects, like the retouch, yada yada, that they did. But he deliberately eliminated all the additional crap that shouldn't have been there.
That's right.
And then you can download them or buy them as a DVD set.
Yep.
I got them for my brother just a couple years ago, and we watched them all in a row, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought I had a set, and I was going to watch that, but I couldn't find it. So I need to get those.
Yeah. Actually, you're the second person who's mentioned that on the podcast, actually. I think we've had that in a previous interview where, this guy, like you said, took the original trilogy.
You Google and it up. You can find him. Mm. And it's legal-ish, I think, because, he did it under – he's got some loophole where it's like a fair play trade sort of situation.
Yeah.
As like a fan fiction adaptation, something. There's a way that he wiggles around being able to sell his versions of the DVDs.
Okay, cool. So George Lucas is not trying to sue him. So that's good.
No, or at least he hasn't yet.
No. I think he's doing okay money-wise. He wouldn't bother, I'm guessing. But
other one, they put Hayden Christensen in it, right?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yep.
After it was 2004, after Attack of the Clones and the Revenge of the Sith came out.
Yep.
Then they tweaked Return of the Jedi again.
Yes.
And put the Hayden Christensen Force Ghost at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Not necessary. Yeah. Well, let's talk briefly, because obviously where Star Wars is at today, it's huge. It's like a institution, So, just briefly, you can go into as much detail as you want, but the prequels, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. Did you like them? What were your thoughts? Yeah.
Oh, at the time, loved them.
Yeah.
Because again, even Phantom Menace, which most of us roll our eyes at now, again, I was in college. Mm-hmm. Call me 19, 20 years old. I don't know. I remember my brother and I and some friends, we lined up to camp at the theater overnight just to buy the tickets.
Yeah, that's right.
Because this is back before you could just get on your phone and do it, right? And this was, and we had hundreds of people in line behind it. We were the second and third person in line. We got there in the evening. They went on sale the next morning. And by the time we did it, we had hundreds of people in line behind us. We were up all night just playing board games and having a laugh. It was great.
Wow, yeah.
And that was to buy tickets to Phantom Menace, which we all pretty much agree wasn't great. But I remember seeing that, I think, 3 or 4 times the first couple weeks.
Yep.
Because I would see it with my friends, saw it with my mom, saw it with my dad. Yep. Loved it.
Yep.
And then now I can look back and go, not the best.
Yeah.
Good story, good ideas.
Yep.
Lucas isn't good at writing dialogue. We can all appreciate that.
Yes.
He's good at ideas and visions.
Yep.
100%. You should leave someone else to write the dialogue.
Of course. Yeah.
But I think where he really excelled later was when he and I think Filoni got involved and they started doing the Clone Wars cartoons.
Right.
Which, excellent.
Okay.
Clone Wars cartoons and the Rebels cartoons, super excellent.
Oh, right.
Those are the best.
Yeah, I haven't seen any.
Those, I think, those redeem that era of Star Wars because they help give a lot more depth to the prequel movies.
Okay.
And they help make Anakin into a better, deeper, more relatable character than kind of the rush job that has to happen to him in the original trilogy.
Of course. Okay, interesting. Yeah, well, I haven't explored that back catalogue yet of cartoons. I may get around to it one day, but I guess like you said, it kind
now of... they're doing the Bad Batch is kind of the finale of that era of cartoons, which they're just a few episodes away from finishing.
Yep. Okay, awesome. And then we've got the most recent trilogy featuring, Rey and Kylo Ren and all that. Yeah, your thoughts on that series?
Fun, liked them, didn't love them. It's the fact that I don't think they had a plan, which was the trouble.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Force Awakens came out, and it was amazing, because it was just, again, the technology had jumped, and it was just nostalgia.
Yep.
But then you walk out of the theater after you're like, that's the best. Mm-hmm. And you really, really think about it, and they just redid A New Hope all over again. It's the same plot, same struggle, same ending. We got to get inside and blow the thing up from the inside. It's the same thing, but it was so good and so fun. It was fan service.
Yeah, it was well done. Yeah. And then showing Luke Skywalker at the end, it was like, oh, yes, we're in. Yeah. We're back.
And then they have the whole feud with the directors, and you know, Rian Johnson gets involved, and then they backpedal and they kind of because there was enough backlash against it being too much of a rehash that they then went a completely different direction in Last Jedi, and then everybody hated that. So then they went back to with the Rise of Skywalker, and it was just disjointed. There was no plan, yeah, no execution.
Yeah, and still only a 2 year gap as well between those films. Like all the other ones had a 3 year gap. So I think they were rushing them a bit to get them out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my take.
I think they were just kind of riding the cash cow and they weren't really putting a lot of thought into how they got there.
Yeah.
Just throwing in characters from the day for the sake of it, just for nostalgia. And, oh, here's this person. Here's this thing.
That's it. You're like, yeah.
Did that need to be there?
No, probably not. No. But then you had a couple of, in between those, you had a couple of interesting additions. You had the Han Solo movie, which was meh. I'm sure you probably agree, but Rogue One was pretty solid. Yeah. What did you think?
The best.
Yeah.
Really I love good. Rogue One.
Absolutely.
It's the best movie they've done since the original trilogy.
100%. It was adult, Star Wars for adults, wasn't it? Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And it's the reason that Andor is the best TV show of Star Wars that they've ever done.
Yep.
And it's, you know what? Neither of those movies ever does. No Force, no Skywalkers, no Jedi.
Mm.
It's just, the lore of the system, the environment, the people, the culture, the politics.
Yeah.
And that's enough to do a show. You don't need lightsabers and force wielding people. Yeah. Skywalkers at all. And it's just,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, things good if it's done well, but you don't absolutely have to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, The Mandalorian as well has done really well. And I think it's interesting. Like, and apparently there's a new trilogy of Star Wars films in the works. You know, they just can't, you know, they can't wait to
double.
To make some more money, I suppose. But I hope they make some good choices this time. You know, like I think there's a chance here to, you know, make up for some of the mistakes with the previous trilogy. You know, like cash, you know, capitalize on what the TV shows have done well. So I think, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the future of the series goes, you know, and how many more trilogies
are there. Rey's getting at least, you
know? So, yeah.
Rey's getting at least one movie, I think, to kind of further her journey and probably rebooting the Jedi. And I think they're doing a movie perhaps in the High Republic era, which is pre-original trilogy.
Right.
Okay. Or pre-prequels even.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. What would you like to see for Star Wars in the future? Do you want a new trilogy? Do you want more TV shows? Do you want like less Jedi, like more Jedi? Like what would you like to see? What's your ideal Star Wars experience?
I'd like to see, I think more better, like the TV shows currently are catching me more than the show. I want to see them do more things with Ahsoka, but I like Ahsoka much more in the Clone Wars and Rebels than I did in the comics and books than I have in the Ahsoka show. She was okay, but like she's a more interesting character in the other ones to kind of bring her to that point.
Right.
I want them to do stuff with Grand Admiral Thrawn, which we're going to see in the upcoming probably Mandalorian and.
Yep.
There's like some Dave Filoni movie, which is going to kind of wrap everything up from his various shows. They're kind of teasing it to sort of be like an Avengers Endgame sort of situation where it kind of brings the threads of several TV shows together with one big.
Right.
But my hope is that he doesn't squander Thrawn as just like a generic big bad.
Yep.
Because if you read the lore in the comics and the novels that like really bring his story to life, he's much more of a complicated gray character, fighting for different reasons for his home culture than they ever explore in the Ahsoka show so far, where they just kind of paint him as the next big Imperial Admiral. It's like,
yeah, yeah,
there's more going on. So I don't want them to just like squander him as a disposable bad guy. I really want them to flesh out his motivations and make him more relatable and even admirable, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, like,
if they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, with the amount of Star Wars stuff that you've seen and consumed and all that, I think, you know, I hope that the creators of the show are like thinking in those terms as well, like thinking in terms of the fans who've seen all of the stuff. And it's like, let's take what's good about the trilogies, the cartoons, the TV shows, the books, and try and feed that into this new trilogy and keep it going for as long as possible. I mean, because it's Star Wars, right? I mean, it kind of invented modern day cinema. It invented the blockbuster. So it's really central. You know, it's one of those franchises that's central to the to the movie business. You know, if it was, if people all of a sudden were like, oh, Star Wars, who gives a crap about that? That would be a pretty dark, depressing day. You know, I think there's still a love really... and a passion there for it, but it's got to be done right. Yeah.
I don't think it's a guarantee anymore because I have had a couple of duds.
Yeah.
So I think they need to earn us back to like make it.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, any Star Wars movie is going to make money. There's no way it's not, but
yeah, of course.
I think if they turn out a couple more duds, they're going to start losing people who are just going to give up on it.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Or at least pick and choose a little more,
mm-hmm.
Thoughtfully.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I'll be there opening day regardless.
Well, that's it.
Hopefully, they can do it proud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think they're moving the new trilogy into production pretty soon. We may even see the next film as early as next year, the end of 2025. Right. And then also you've got another three Avatar films as well coming out every sort of 2 or 3 years as well. So I think for the next decade, it's going to be Avatar and Star Wars films coming out every December.
Yeah, they're alternating a couple.
Yeah,
because I think there was the trilogy. There's also the Rey project. I think Taika Waititi is getting one to direct.
Right. It
should be fun.
Oh, cool.
Because he's done several Mandalorian episodes.
Right. Yep.
And then we saw how much fun he could have with Marvel.
Of course.
You know, so,
yeah.
That could hopefully be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch this space, hey? Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, sure. And then... just coming back to Jedi, obviously the film that started this conversation, you sort of mentioned what you like about this, how you rewatched it a lot as a kid. Favorite scene from the film, favorite moment, or is there too many to choose?
Yeah. Ooh, favorites, probably the battle with Jabba and his goons.
Oh, yeah.
The Doom Sea, the Sarlacc. I mean, it's just so cool. You got this giant pit monster with tentacles and they're just knocking all the bad guys into it. And
yep.
You know, especially in hindsight as an adolescent, it doesn't hurt to have Carrie Fisher in a gold bikini.
Of course. Yes.
But yeah, but she, you know, she's there as sort of sci-fi eye candy, but she's badass. I mean, she chokes out Jabba. She frees herself. She doesn't need the boys to come to her rescue. She steps up, takes care of her own business.
Absolutely.
And kills one of the most powerful beings in the galaxy.
Yeah, so, that's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But it's just action-packed, you know? Mm. But it's also fun because you get to see the evolution of Luke because he steps into that whole process with Jabba just way more confident and powerful than we last saw him where he was, you know, screaming at Darth Vader as he falls into the reactor at the Cloud City, right? But you also get to see how he's a little dark, right? He's got one foot in the dark side. Like he's doing things that are not very Jedi-like at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's choking out the Gamorrean guards. He's threatening Jabba. He's like, I'm going to kill you if you don't do what I say. Like, these aren't Jedi things. Obi-Wan would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, and he points the gun at his barge and blows it up just out of spite. That's not very Jedi.
Yeah, he's a bit of a badass in this film. And I think that kind of, you know, foreshadows the possibility of him being, you know, taken by the dark side, you know, like towards the end of the film. And you know, how he's got Darth Vader down on the ground and Palpatine's like, good, now come and kneel by me. And he's for a second there, he's like, would I do this just to win and take control? But then he's like, you know what? No, I won't change the dark side. So yeah, like I won't come to the dark side. So not definitely the there is that. Once he realizes Darth Vader is his father, I guess he embraces that dark side of himself, but makes the right choices at the end. So yeah, I think out of the three films, the Luke Skywalker and Jedi was my favorite portrayal of Luke Skywalker because he's by that point, he's like a fully realized character. So it was, really good to see.
But he's also able to step to the edge and step back.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
And then he helps redeem his father, which is really nice. And even after you only had the first three movies, the redemption of Darth Vader is touching and it's great.
Yep.
But after the prequel trilogy and the Clone Wars cartoon and all the other stuff where you get to really learn Anakin, it's even nicer to watch it now and go,
yeah,
we got him back.
Yeah,
that's the Anakin we liked from the day before he made some bad decisions.
In really well. Yeah, yeah, and that would be an interesting conversation. What if it was only ever the original trilogy? Like we never got the prequels, we never got the reboot, we never got the shows. Yeah, like, but you know, that's not the world we live in today. Like every if there's a franchise there, there's going to be a franchise. You know. So,
it's still a nice redemption arc either way, but it's even better if you get the prequels to really see a 6-episode journey of Anakin from a sweet kid to a bratty, but otherwise relatable, good teenager to, heartbroken, et cetera. And evil.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great character arc. Yeah. Yeah. And just like that, you know, time has flown by, and we've covered your three films really well, Todd. I think, you know, we've gone in depth. We've talked about three really different films, three very different characters, history and archaeology versus mind erasing and Star Wars, right? So we've covered three very different kind of things, and a really great array of movies. So it was great to hear your thoughts on them and how they connected with you over the years and everything. So yeah, thank you for coming on My Movie Story and sharing your passion about these films. It's been a really great conversation.
Good to do it, man. Really appreciate you having me on.
Pleasure. All right, and thank you again, and thanks for everyone for watching. Be sure to go back and check out all our other episodes. We've now completed the Star Wars trilogy, so you can go back and check out episodes for New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. Of course, you know, reach out if anyone is interested in being on the show. We're always looking for guests. Again, thanks, Todd, for being on My Movie Story.
Good to be here, man. You take care.
All right. You too. See ya. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.